Coming up on Tech News Today, Facebook news feed updates are slowing, and that isn't a very good thing when that's how you make your money. Reddit finally unveils its official app for iOS and Android, 3D printing stem cells with the BioPen, and how the iPad Pro has become Mike Hurley's primary computing platform. And we also have other things that we talk about. Tech News Today is next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1487, recorded Thursday, April 7th, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all of the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple, step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit.
Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about all the tech news with people who will stay up till midnight to talk about the tech news.
Sometimes they do.
Mm-hmm. I am Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell. Before we kind of move onward, we kind of went back and forth on whether to talk about Rogue One, the trailer released today, the Star Wars it's like a prequel to
A New Hope. Trailer.
I suppose, yeah, it's a teaser trailer for a prequel to A New Hope. We decided to kind of like not talk about it because it turns out people don't really like spoilers, even when it's just about a teaser. But I will say, see it, because it's awesome, and I'm really, really excited for it.
I'm going to forget that you even said it was a prequel, because even that is a spoiler.
That's too much. Yes. That might just actually
He just made that up.
That actually might just be too much for some people. Joining us today is Mike Hurley from Relay.fm. How's it going, Mike?
Very good, guys. Thank you so much for having me today.
Absolutely. It's our pleasure to get you on, finally. So tell people a little bit about Relay, and I mean, you guys are doing a ton of shows over there.
Yeah, we have like 20 shows now, and we're mainly technology focused, but we like to kind of, we make fun podcast content for niche audiences. Like one that we like to mention quite a bit is we have a podcast about pens at Relay FM, as well as shows about technology like Apple and stuff like that. But we like to cater to niches.
Do you have any shows that Rogue One would fall under the umbrella of?
We don't. We like to leave that stuff to Jason at The Incomparable.
That makes sense.
And Jason does a podcast with you also, doesn't he?
He does. Upgrade. I'm actually wearing my Upgrade hoodie.
Oh.
Right now. You can kind of see my logo there. Yeah, so we do Upgrade every week. It's mainly focused on Apple, but kind of whatever the big tech news of the week is will peek its way into Upgrade.
Excellent.
Leave Star Wars and musicals to Jason Smith.
Just those.
Pretty much.
That's it.
Pretty much.
Otherwise, everything else. Well, we have a lot of stuff to talk about today, so let's get right to it here. First things first, what is a social network to do when the core of its business, that is updates from its users, is dropping? Confidential company data was actually shared with the information. It shows a significant challenge for Facebook in keeping its users contributing to the news feed, which happens to be its primary source of revenue. Original sharing, that is personal updates from users and not things like meme posts and that sort of stuff, had seen double-digit declines according to the data that the folks at the information, in particular Amir Fradi, was exposed to. Obviously they're doing things to kind of encourage people to continue posting these original updates, things like live video. They've made algorithmic changes that place more attention on kind of the original updates, app redesigns that, tweaks like putting the update at the top of the app instead of a thing that's hidden that you have to tap to reveal and then, add your update, things like that to improve this. But this doesn't sound good if it's going down and this is kind of the lifeblood of your service. What do you think about this, Mike?
It doesn't surprise me. I think that when Facebook began and it was just a place where people were talking to their friends, they would share their private things or their own thoughts. But now your mom and her sister and her brother and maybe your grandma and your grandpa, they're all on Facebook. So sharing personal things, I think, has become a little bit more difficult in the newsfeed. I would expect these days most people share their their personal things still within Facebook, but in Messenger as opposed to on the wall.
I completely agree. I think it's not just your family. I mean, Facebook sort of forces us to friend all kinds of people that you're not really friends with. You know, people in town that you would walk by in the grocery store and not even really say hi to, but then they somehow asked you to be their friend because they're connected to so-and-so.
Right.
Connected
to really so-and-so. Depends on what your definition of what Facebook is for as a social network is.
So to me,
you know,
it seems
what about employers as well? You know, like future potential employers. I'm sure I know that people do this stuff, like look at what's going on Facebook and stuff like that. Like, that's even worse.
Right. I think that everyone sort of figured that out. I feel like this is a natural evolution. I'm not saying Facebook's going anywhere. Like, evolution moves slowly. But there was that generation that messed up on Facebook all the time, you know, posted pictures of themselves when they thought it was just their friends, when they thought it was, you know, and then you were told, I think I was too old to, Facebook was around after I had stopped messing up, thankfully. But
I had one mess up.
But then, you know, they've been told, like, don't, you know, your employers will look at this, your school will look at this, and they've learned, and they've all moved to Snapchat where, you know, things don't stay around.
Mm-hmm. 15% drop year over year as of the beginning of 2016. 2015, it was 21%. So it's improved. It's not dropping as significantly as far as like original updates are concerned, but it's still not good. And yes, I mean, much of the article is about kind of the move to, you know, more ephemeral messaging. Like, Facebook is what it is at this point. You know, the perception is that it's not as safe to post in a place like Facebook as it is to post in a place like Snapchat. But that this isn't kind of isolated to just Facebook either. Instagram has actually seen declines as well, and they're kind of trying to figure that out. Too many steps in the posting process kind of slows things down. Ultimately, it's definitely something that obviously Facebook has a challenge in front of them, and there are actually people inside of Facebook that are saying, like, this is almost to a certain point unsurmountable. Like, it's almost like this is the direction, and trying to reverse that trend at this point is going to be very difficult, if not impossible. But who knows?
Saying that about Instagram is kind of peculiar, because that is very surprising to me. I wonder if it's to do with the march of brands. Like, as soon as brands and websites and content creators start pushing in, people start to consume more than they do put their own content out there. Because, I mean, that's the only way I could think that Instagram would be solving, would have this kind of problem.
I don't know. I mean, I feel to a certain degree it kind of, at least, and this might be my recurring personal view as far as social networks are concerned, but it's just this saturation point with social networks where I just think there's so many of them, right? And a certain group is going to stick around Facebook. Let's say if 50% of the posts, which comes from the report, are coming from the same people, like original posts are only coming from 50% of Facebook's, you know, users. And when you're talking about more than a billion, you know, five users, however many it is, that's a lot of people. If only a certain percentage of those are doing it, maybe that's a certain segment. Let's say the older users, that's just the social network they use. They don't use Instagram. You know, the younger users have moved on to something else, and that's the one that they use. And Instagram, I feel like there's like a shelf life that I recognize in social networks, and they only last for so long to certain generations. And then it's kind of like, what's the next thing? So, you know, maybe this is just the way it goes with social networks.
Yeah.
Well, it's a speed thing, too. When they were talking about Instagram, I think Facebook's problem was specifically that there were too many reposting of non-original content. Instagram, too many steps. You know, you have to go through the filter and you have to go through the editing. And, you know, with Snapchat, it's just like, hold it up, press the button, press the other button,
Move on.
You're done.
Totally.
I think that it's you know, we don't have time anymore for filters. And my 13-year-old also tells me filters are no longer cool, Mom, by the way.
There we go.
Well, more news about Facebook. The company's big developer event, F8, starts next week. And we've already begun to hear announcements and rumors about what they plan to announce. Yesterday, as we just talked about, Facebook Live came out. And today the company announced Messenger Codes, a way to add friends to Facebook that looks like it's very similar to the way Snapchat lets you add friends. And TechCrunch also had obtained a few leaked documents leading some to believe Facebook is poised to announce a new Messenger platform overrun by bots.
Dun, dun, dun.
And I am curious what makes them think that their new chat bots will fare any better than the ones that we saw, the one that we saw crash.
You're talking about Tay.
Tay, just disaster.
Tay's on the mind right now,
yeah.
Right?
So, okay. I mean, I know it's a little bit different. And I've used some chat bots in Facebook. Like, I don't know if you've used Assist Bot. It's pretty simple. It's like, you know, where can I order food and where can I get a hotel? But, Mike, what do you think about bots in Messenger?
So whenever I think about bots these days, I think about Slack.
Mm-hmm.
And the integrations that you have with Slack, which are kind of like bots in their own way, that's what's really interesting to me. I mean, the Tay thing was just a disaster that Microsoft somehow didn't foresee. But I think about what you can do with Slack these days, and we use it at Relay FM for everything. And we have so much stuff pipe into it. And I have friends that run e-commerce companies and stuff, and they're able to pull so much data in. Basically, if companies are willing to work with Facebook to build bots inside of Messenger, that could be super cool. Like, you know, I see Domino's do all this crazy stuff these days, right? Like, imagine like a Domino's pizza Messenger bot where you just like send it an emoji and it sends you a pizza. That seems like something they would do, right? And that kind of stuff is more interesting to me than bots that are attempting to try and be artificial intelligence, like this the Messenger bots that Facebook have been showing off so far.
Yeah, so we've known that Messenger is kind of going in this direction since actually last year's F8 conference. It was kind of teased then. So we've had like a year to kind of approach this and worry about, you know, whether bots and businesses are going to make Messenger experience, you know, untenable. The chatbots will have the ability to do things like respond with structured messages. So, you know, if things like where, you know, someone could enter in like a title that's hit back on a particular query or an image, a description, a URL, call to action, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I think it's a little different than the whole Tay thing, because the Tay thing, yes, was a bot, but it was also a bot that learns. And that was, I think, the key kind of downfall of Tay versus something inside Messenger.
Hopefully, well, it would have to learn too. I mean,
well, I don't, but well, I no, I mean, I, well, I wonder about that, actually. That's a really good question. I'm sure, you know, maybe there's an extension of the bot system where it allows for that stuff and that people program that in. But like what I envision out of this is really just like a query, like a query base that kind of follows normal, you know, human language, but still kind of does the things that you expect your like digital assistant to kind of do, mm-hmm. you know? Hopefully Microsoft doesn't, you know, bring Tay into the Messenger environment in one way or another.
Well, I think these two stories are really combined. I mean, because mm-hmm. they're the same thing, Facebook trying to make more money. And if we're not, I mean, it doesn't, let's be honest, they don't really care if I'm like opening up my heart on Facebook and being vulnerable and posting a bunch of personal stuff. They don't care. They just care that that's more interesting maybe to people and keeps them around more often.
Than memes.
Than a meme. And so, this is the same thing. Well, if they can move everyone into Messenger with these bots and then make deals with companies and, you know, put advertising in Messenger and all that, then that's another way to make money.
Yeah. I should also say that next Tuesday, that's April 12th from 10 to 11 Pacific, I will be live with Leo. We might have one other person covering the F8 kind of keynote. So we're going to be on hand, twit.tv/live next Tuesday, April 12th. 10 to 11 Pacific, and tune in. I'm very interested to see what they announce. We kind of already know a little bit of that, but, you know, more so. Kind of amazing that it took Reddit this long, but today they finally released an official app for Android and iOS. Each app on each different platform, I thought this was pretty awesome, adheres to the design language that's tailored for that platform. So they didn't go with like one design language for both sides. They really, you know, on Android, for example, they really kind of adhered pretty closely to material design spec and that sort of stuff. And iOS looks very different from that regard. Support for Alien Blue, that's the third-party Reddit app that was acquired by Reddit in 2014, ends with the release of the official app. Reddit actually says the decision to rebuild from the ground up was a difficult one, but the result, you know, you end up with a cleaner code base, faster, more modern, more usable app that they can update regularly, which they plan to do. They plan on doing an update, you know, every month and all that kind of stuff. Are you a Reddit user, Mike? Is this like music to your ears?
I am not a Reddit user. I just keep up with a couple of small subreddits that I use an app on iOS called Narwhal, for, because it's really simple and it's really clean. Mm-hmm. That's why I like it. I have tried out Alien Blue, and it was a nightmare. I couldn't work out how to use Alien Blue. So I haven't tried this new app, but Narwhal gives me a lot of what I need. I'm going to assume that the Reddit app will be tailored more towards people that use... Like, I don't even subscribe to the front page of Reddit. Like, I just want to see the subreddits that I like to keep up with. Sure. And that's it. Reddit, for me, is just one of those things that I missed, and now I just can't catch up on. Same as Snapchat, really. Like, I feel like I missed Snapchat when it first came out, and now I have no idea what to do about it.
Right.
I downloaded the app, and it's fine, but you're exactly right. They pushed me directly to the front page of Reddit, as opposed to sending me to, when I logged into the, you know, the pages that I actually am a mod for, mm-hmm. or I don't know what if I'm a mod. We have iOS today, and we have a Tech News today, and they are sadly, our mods that do tend to it are great. I don't really check it that much. It's not a vibrant community, unfortunately. And we talked about Reddit last night, and I didn't get a chance to say, like, I've kind of moved away from it. It's, I mean, there's so much nasty stuff on there. There's so many communities that are horrible. I absolutely believe in free speech, but there comes a point where it's like, I don't know if I want to be hanging out with those people that are just next door. I'm obviously not going in these horrible subreddits, but they're there. And, you know, Reddit's doing a little to keep them at bay, but not enough. So there's so many other places where I can keep in contact with people and learn and research and see funny, you know, Photoshop contests that I don't think I need it.
Yeah. I will go ahead and say I'm a Reddit fanboy. Like, I use it all the time. It's basically my nighttime ritual when I'm laying down to go to bed, is like the last 10 minutes before I shut my eyes. I lay in bed and I scroll through the front page of Reddit just because it's hilarious and I enjoy it and it's fun. I follow a lot of different subreddits. I've used tons of third-party apps, which I think is a big kind of component here. An analogy or the analog to what Reddit is doing with their official app is kind of what Twitter did with its official app, but they're very different, right? Twitter existed for many years with this vibrant, you know, third-party development community and people creating apps, and this app's better than that one because there was no official app. But then Twitter really kind of clamped down on it and said, okay, we've got our new app now. All, you know, all of these people that developed and spent all this time doing this stuff, we're limiting you severely. And it, you know, it kind of stopped progress there and kind of left a sour taste in a lot of people's mouth. Reddit is not doing that. They're keeping it open. In fact, that, you know, they said in, who was it? Alex Lee, who's the VP of Consumer Product, said in a Reddit thread that was the announcement of this, which is interesting reading through, that he cares about staying committed to Reddit's free API and keeping that wide open, and that this app isn't going to appeal to every single person, but it's going to appeal, you know, to the people that it appeals to. And if you like something else, go ahead and use it. So I really like seeing that from Reddit, that they aren't kind of going the Twitter approach, just because there are so many third party apps, and they're all pretty good. I mean, there's a lot of really good ones out there. So I'm happy that they're doing that. And that's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, The Verge reports that James Comey, FBI Director James Comey, says that the tool the FBI bought and paid for from a third party in order to crack the password on the work phone of one of the San Bernardino shooters works on a, quote, narrow slice of iPhones. It doesn't work on any of the iPhone 6s or even the iPhone 5s with its secure enclave. What I think is really interesting here is that Comey admitted that they bought this tool to crack the phone. And the other part of this story that I'm fascinated with, he says they haven't decided yet whether to tell Apple about how the third party infiltrated the phone. And I'm just wondering what you guys think. Do you think they should tell them, Apple?
Mike, you go first.
I think they should tell them, but I'm not sure what I think about this whole statement, really. I mean, it's such difficult things to tread through, but I feel like it's really convenient that this tool will only work with this one type of iPhone and all other iPhones, right? Like, it doesn't work. Like, the tool, at least, that the FBI decided to purchase and use was one that would only work with this specific type of iPhone. Maybe they want to bring this kind of case back to the courts some point in the future. especially because it's very likely that Apple will be touting enhanced security with their next iPhones or next versions of iOS. It's very likely that that is something on Apple's roadmap. It's such a difficult thing to talk about, but I think if the FBI know of something that Apple don't in regards to security of their devices, they probably should tell them. I don't think they will.
Yeah, from a user standpoint, let's say, it would be nice for users to know that Apple has their back. Obviously, if they told Apple, what does Apple do? Apple fixes the hole, and then they don't have that access anymore. So I don't think there's any way they're going to tell Apple, but I suppose that could be proven wrong. Do I feel like they should? Well, I mean, for you know, the users that might have an insecure device as a result of it, sure. But yeah, like you say, Mike, it's really kind of tricky because you understand at least to some degree where their desire to have this access comes from. Some of it they outright say, and some of it maybe they are a little bit more cagey about. But so you kind of understand that the reason behind it. But yeah.
I mean, I think that it could be that it just works on this phone because the 5S was when they started the thumbprint and
the secure enclave,
which I like to say. But it's this big question about whether we have the right to be completely dark. And, you know, obviously law enforcement doesn't want that. And that's separate from this other issue, which is, does the government have the right to demand that Apple make their products insecure, make this government OS? And I mean, I don't think that the FBI thought they had this case. Otherwise, I think they wouldn't have backed down, which is what they did, backed down or found someone to crack this one iPhone. It's sort of the same thing, I think.
Right. Yeah, I would agree. Mm-hmm. And finally, thanks to A Mentor for Kids, that's the name, in the TNT subreddit for this story and our ongoing look at how neato 3D printers are becoming. Check out the BioPen. It's a tool for surgeons that allows them to literally draw new cartilage inside human joints, printing viable human stem cells directly into the damaged area. A surgeon actually sculpts with the pen. It's a small handheld device, and including in areas that couldn't be covered with materials that were produced externally. So basically this thing is allowing them to do this kind of surgical work in ways that they haven't been able to before, which is just really impressive. I guess the parts for this assembly come in around $10,000. But this isn't happening yet. It's not cleared. It's still in development. Not ready for approval or medical use yet, but still just awesome. I more and more just the advancements in 3D printing are getting me really excited.
I wonder, like, in 50 years' time, will we even need to have organ donors anymore?
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if someone needs a heart, just print one out. Like,
well,
we're done.
And you know, that's actually not that silly when you take yesterday's story about the articulated 3D printer that actually creates robots that could walk out of the 3D printer, you know, with articulated joints and stuff. Take that, you combine it with this. I mean, yes. I mean, it's basically the same thing. You're printing a working prototype heart, let's say, out of stem cell. You know, it's just crazy.
As long as you're okay with a robot heart.
What's that?
As long as you're okay with a robot heart, then.
Robot heart's better than no heart. Would you be okay with a robot heart?
Yes. Yeah, it's interesting. I think I never heard of 3D printing with a pen like that. You know, it has to be that specific. I think that's really interesting too. So yeah, there are some limitations. It's very heat sensitive, it says. So
it reminded me actually, and then of course I found a link to Lance Ulanoff at Mashable, his article on the CreoPop, which was an Indiegogo campaign that allowed you to do 3D printing. Well, you're seeing it in a video right here, basically in the 3D space. You're actually printing lines out in space and being able to stack things up and draw in a three-dimensional way with a pen. So kind of along those lines, but very, very cool stuff. All right, up next, the 9.7-inch iPad Pro, or as Megan calls it, the Baby Pro, is hitting the hands of those who were quick to order after the announcement last month. Mike and Megan have both spent some time with the device and have some thoughts. We'll talk a little bit about that. But first, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of this episode. That's Blue Apron. You I'm pretty sure you want to know how to cook. You need to know how to cook. It's certainly a good skill to have. Not only will you feel like you know your way around the kitchen, but cooking at home means eating healthier, making things that you want to eat, saving money instead of ordering expensive takeout again. You don't need another pizza. Where do you start? I know I don't need another pizza. Where do you start? Blue Apron has you covered for less than $10 per meal. Blue Apron delivers all the fresh ingredients that you're going to need to create home-cooked meals. All you got to do is follow the easy step-by-step instructions that are included in the box. Each meal can be prepared in under 40 minutes. No more overwhelming trips to the grocery store, especially the last minute. No more sad takeout. No matter what your dietary preferences are, Blue Apron actually takes that into consideration as well. Makes it a breeze to discover and prepare all the dishes that they put out. And they never duplicate their dishes, so it's always different. Spring gemelli pasta with garlic, sugar, snap peas, crispy capers and soft-boiled eggs, a roasted chicken and mixed mushrooms with crispy rosemary orange salad and chipotle pan sauce. You're doing this all right in your kitchen. You're the one cooking this stuff. Cook with ingredients that you've never used before. Things like watermelon radishes, yuzu juice, labneh cheese. Recipes are between 500 to 700 calories per portion. It's all just delicious food. It's good for you, and you made it. Right now, you can get your first two meals free. Just go to blueapron.com/twit. Check out this week's menu, and you'll get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. Love Blue Apron, and we thank Blue Apron for their support of Tech News Today.
So first, I should say that I did not coin the term baby pad.
You didn't?
No, that was, I believe, Serenity Caldwell from iMore came up with the term baby pad.
It's a good term.
And then a viewer called this the Jai Pad. That was the name, the Jai Pad.
Jai Pad.
So, Mike, you and I have both used both of these. Mm-hmm. This one just came out this week. This one is last fall, I guess. Seems like forever ago. But what are your initial thoughts having used both?
So when iOS 9 came out in September, I started to get more interested in the iPad again. The split screen multitasking made it something that made sense to me as a product to use again. And then when the 12.9-inch iPad Pro came out, I thought it was kind of ridiculous, but I wanted to give it a go. And I immediately fell in love with it, right? So I got it when it came out last year. Having all of that space for like side-by-side apps was fantastic. And then when the 9.7-inch iPad Pro came out, I was like, I don't want that. I don't need that. And then I started thinking about it more, and I started talking to some of my friends who had them and people that I knew that had them for review. And I started to think a little bit more about my working life. So I have moved the majority of my work to iOS now. I use my iPad Pro for that. And basically the only thing that I use a Mac for now is recording and editing my shows. So I wanted to think, what could the smaller iPad Pro get me? Like what would the use be for that? And I started thinking about how for many years now, I have had a desktop computer and a laptop. And I use them for different things. I maybe use them for being portable. I use them for different tasks. They're powered in different ways. And I started to wonder, why would I not do this for iOS as well? So I have this 13-inch iPad, which is portable, but not fantastically portable. I only have the Wi-Fi version. And I started to think, like, could I maybe start to use two different iPads in the same way that I've used two different Macs? So I picked one of the 9.7-inch iPad Pros up a couple of days ago. I got the LTE version this time. And I've only had it for a few days, but I really like it. But I really like it for different reasons. So my iPad Pro, the 12.9-inch, I use that now to get my work done. I use it to prepare for shows. I use it to send out invoices. I use it for email and Slack and everything. I do everything on that thing. And what I've found, though, is that the 9.7-inch iPad, I can still do a lot of that stuff on it, but it's not as comfortable because in split screen, there isn't the same amount of space. But it's far superior for reading and checking Twitter and doing things like that than my larger iPad is. So now I'm kind of in this weird position where I have two iPads. They're both good at the work that each other does, but they're each better at different things. And I feel like a terrible person because I have two iPads now. But I know that I would expect it's the same as this happens with our audiences, and I'm sure that a lot of your audience is thinking the same. The people that think I'm crazy for using iOS in the way that I do, because lots of people find it slower, or lots of people find things that are not possible to do on iOS. But for me now, I enjoy using iOS more, even though I know that there are some things that I could probably do quicker on a Mac, or I could automate a Mac to do. I find using iOS and the apps on iOS just a more enjoyable experience. So I guess probably now I'm a two iPad guy, for as terrible as that is.
Well, I have a family of five, and we realized just recently that we have six iPads for our five.
Wow.
For the five of us. So you shouldn't feel that bad. I agree with you. I think it's personal, and it's what you do for your work.
Sure.
Because we here use Google Sheets and Google Docs. And Google Sheets is really, it's garbage on iOS. Like, it really is. Like,
yes.
I can't. You know, I guess you don't have to use it for your, we made you use it for today, so sorry.
No, we actually still do use it, and I begrudgingly use it. For a lot of our show preparation, the collaboration stuff, we use Docs. But recently we started using a service called Quip, because it features split screen multitasking on the iPad, and we're starting to look more at that, because unfortunately, Google seems to have shown their hand that they're not interested now in maybe staying up with the latest and greatest at the speed that they used to on iOS. Because at this point, I don't really know why Google Docs and Sheets doesn't have split-screen multitasking. At this point, it feels like just a decision at Google.
It's so weird that Google wouldn't make that a priority. I mean, just based on the sheer fact that so many people are mobile now, and Google, more than anything, wants people using its products so that they can, you know, target ads or whatever the case may be. I'm sure a lot of people. It's fine. You know, I use Sheets. I mean, I'm on a Chrome OS, the Chromebook Pixel right now, so it's different from Android. But on Android, like, it's not my preference to use Sheets or Google Docs on Android. I do because it's there and it's okay. But I couldn't use Sheets in the same way that I do on a desktop in Android 100% of the time. So it's not even perfect there. It's just kind of surprising that that type of a ball would be dropped, because I'm sure there are a lot of iPad users like you, like both of you, iOS device users that would use that software suite if it was better or updated or whatever. Mm-hmm.
If I weren't using those tools for collaboration and I was just purely needing a word processor and a spreadsheet, I would be using Excel and Word, because Microsoft had done an incredible job with staying up to date with the new stuff in iOS. And they are ready on day one to support all the iPad Pro stuff. The Pencil is all greatly supported in those. You know, if I was just keeping my spreadsheets, I would be using Excel now on the iPad.
Mm-hmm.
So do you use a keyboard with both?
Yeah, for me now, so this is part of the other part of, for me, why I'm interested in the smaller iPad Pro. For me now, an iPad is a keyboard, the iPad, and the Pencil. Like, it's all three of them is what makes an iPad. Yeah, and I know it makes getting into an iPad a $1,000 experience. But for me, that combination of those things, the keyboard, which is always attached, and the Pencil, which is just fantastic, and I use it for navigation on the iPad. I have been a Wacom user for a while, and I like to use the Apple Pencil just to click around the UI on iOS. It's better for RSI with me and all of that stuff. So for me, the whole package now is what it's all about.
And have you figured out a way to keep your Pencil? Where to keep your Pencil?
I bought a pen loop. So again, I'm the pen guy, right? I have weird solutions.
Yes.
So you can buy like pen loops to stick onto notebooks. So I have a pen loop which has been stuck to the back of my iPad, and the Pencil just slides in the top and it's held in by elastic.
So what does it stick on? What's the adhesive?
It's just a little, the pen loop is attached to an adhesive pad which I stick onto the back of the iPad.
Oh.
You don't just keep the Pencil stuck into the port when you're not using it all the time, just protruding out of the port.
Yeah,
that's just walk around with it. You know?
Not begging for trouble, not asking for trouble at all.
Like this?
Yeah, see, super portable.
It's beautiful.
I don't know. What do you think? So, Megan, you've had this now for Well, for a couple of days, and you've used the larger, the what did you call it?
The J-pad.
The J-pad extensively prior. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I never felt like the J-pad was too big. I really...
The word just keeps getting weirder every time it's said. Anyways.
I'm just wondering if there's some double entendre that I don't know.
I don't know.
I never felt that it was too big. It's great for watching movies. The speaker is great. I carry a giant purse, so it fits in my purse.
Right.
But I also have this special laptop bag that has a special space for an iPad, and it didn't fit in that, but this one does. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, I like them both, and I think I'm going to probably have to give one of them back to Leo at some point. So I'm just using them both as much as I can until then.
Soak it up. Soak it up while you can. And to kind of answer what you were talking about as far as like $1,000, you know, per instance based on all the kit and everything like that. I mean, if you're truly replacing, say, a desktop computer or a laptop, that's actually a bargain. So, if that whole setup works for you, and again, like we've said, it's going to be person to person. Everybody has different needs and all that kind of stuff. But if it works for you, that's actually you're kind of saving money if that's the best solution for you.
If I was a writer and not a podcaster, I wouldn't use a Mac anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't podcast on your iPad. You can't.
No, just right now, the tools and the setups are just not exactly where I'd like them to be. I do believe that within the next couple of years, it will be possible to do, and I will maybe start looking at doing it more then. But right now, you know, I know people that we have a show which is actually about iOS on Relay FM, and one of the hosts, he records on iOS and edits on iOS. He's the only person that I know that does it. It's a show called Canvas, and Fraser does that. And I think that he's a trailblazer and right. Kind of I don't envy him in that scenario because he uses multiple iOS devices to just record. I think Apple's going to make some headway into trying to make this better in the future. iOS just needs some more audio work and some more audio APIs, I think, to really help just drive that point home.
Yeah,
and Jason Snell sat in for me earlier on iOS Today on Monday, and he had some, I think, apps that he recommended, too, that he uses.
Yeah, Ferrite is mm-hmm. one of them yeah. that Jason would have definitely recommended. Mm-hmm. He's edited episodes of The Incomparable with 8 people, you know, and yeah. 8 tracks, and it's possible to do. It definitely is.
Wow. I don't know if that sounds fun or not, but it's possible.
Yeah, so right now I'll still keep all 3 and then try to until I'm forced into using just one.
Yes. Excellent. Very cool stuff. TNT's fan of the day is Stephen Perry. Not that Steve Perry, a different Steve Perry. Stephen Perry at Gallifrey Rebel on Twitter, who sent us this punishing view of his exercise ritual, saying, "Keeping me distracted on the treadmill. Thanks, by the way, LOL." So apparently we are motivation on the treadmill for some of our viewers and listeners. Whatever it takes, man, whatever it takes. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of your setup or yourself. Post it to Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we'll find it. And finally, many are looking to Magic Leap to bring a new level of awesomeness to the AR-VR race. The company, you may remember, landed almost $800 million in new funding last February, the largest C-round funding in internet history, all while having no product to show for it, at least publicly, with investors recognizing its efforts as heralding a sea change due to its mixed reality technology. Well, an updated patent application that was filed this morning gives at least a glimpse of the strange world of the future thanks to Magic Leap. The overarching goal here is, of course, overlaying digital stuff on top of real stuff. And one way to understand what that means is detailed in a user's trip to a coffee shop inside the patent. So step one, imagine wearing something that does AR stuff to the coffee shop. That's the first step. Step two, the system senses and gathers the environment and augments things like the location of doors in the environment or highlights maybe the coffee menu items that you're looking at. And beyond that, let's say a coffee is delivered. Imagine an image, a video, a sound, some sort of a video sequence is fired off, say a jungle sequence. In the patent, they give the example of Madagascar, you know, like suddenly this whole jungle sequence, you know, comes barreling out of the walls at you. And I don't know, which is just kind of confusing. That feels like a takeover ad to me.
Right, makes you spill your coffee.
But I don't know. Is this a world we need to live in, Mike? What do you think?
I don't know. I feel like... I feel like at this point, Magic Leap really need to give us a little bit more as to what they're actually doing. Because then stories like this come out and it can be either easy for us to laugh at them or for us to maybe get a completely wrong view of what they're trying to build.
Totally.
I think it wouldn't hurt if this stuff's going to start coming out into the world now to try and get ahead of it a little bit. Because there are obviously people that are working with this stuff. Investors are seeing this stuff. It might be nice for us to see a little bit more about it. This, what they've posed here, this scenario, I'm not too keen on this scenario.
No, I mean, it is just a patent, so you're right. Sure. I mean, they would do well. They know that the press is looking at patents, and so they would do well to get out in front of it. But yeah, it seems weird and unnecessary and nothing that we don't already have. Like, I feel like it's those apps that, you know, where you're walking around and it shows you, you know, just overlays where you are, directions, that sort of thing. But yeah, I'm with you. I need to see something, Magic Leap, or I'm going to stop caring.
It's like HoloLens for the world that you're walking through, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I understand that maybe the long term is that's where this kind of stuff is kind of heading. It would need to miniaturize even more than it already is, and who knows? I'm not guessing that it has, but who knows? Maybe it has with Magic Leap technology. I'm guessing not so, but yeah, it just sounds like a takeover ad to me.
Yeah.
When all I want is my coffee. Seriously, I just wanted to pick up my coffee.
Right. Don't mess with my coffee.
However,
that's enough virtual reality for me.
Yeah. However, I did choose to wear it into the coffee shop. So I'm kind of asking for it at that point. We'll see when that happens. Maybe, who knows? Maybe at Google I.O. Maybe this is part of their big AR, VR stuff. We'll see something about Magic Leap.
I'm not going to hold my breath.
Yeah, neither am I. Mike Hurley, man, it's a pleasure getting you on. Thank you so much for staying up so late. To participate. We started at midnight your time and really appreciate you taking the time to do the show with us.
No, that's a blast. Thank you so much, guys.
Absolutely. So tell people a little bit about, you know, just the many places that they can find you, the stuff you're up to, all that kind of stuff.
So as we mentioned, I'm one of the co-founders and a podcast host at Relay FM. If you're looking for shows about creative work, space, product design, video games, technology, even pens, go to relay.fm. We have something for you, I'm sure. And I am over on Twitter. I am at iMike, iMyke.
Fantastic. Mike, we'll talk to you soon. We'd love to have you back sometime.
Anytime.
All right. Have a great night.
Thanks, guys.
See you later. Tomorrow's guest will be the always awesome Sam Moscovich from Ars Technica joining us for the whole show. Look forward to that. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. Be a part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv, or leave us a voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can find us on Twitter. We are at TechNewsTodayTV.
You can subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to find me on Twitter, I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Kara Cole, and all the folks who help us produce this show every single day. And thanks to you. That's right, you, for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everyone.
High five.